Sit back and relax. It's time to improve your financial lot in life. Produced at CFIS-FM Studios in Prince George, this is your tune-up. And here's your host, Deb Ross.
Hello and welcome. So there is so much information about financial planning that is readily available online. I'm quite convinced that a lot of the details are either misinformation or part truths, and that makes it difficult for Canadians to navigate through the financial planning world, which of course is very important that we navigate in a healthy and knowledgeable way through the financial planning world that we are part of. So I have invited a seasoned financial planner as my guest today. His name is Kevin Plouffe. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun.
So we are just looking at discussing a variety of topics, kind of pick through. We're looking at a potpourri of basically general planning information. But first, I'd really like to have our audience introduced to you personally. You know, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe what attracted you personally to the financial planning career and profession?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so I started 21 years ago this month in the financial planning field. I was recruited in by a family member that was in a company that was looking for people to be in the industry. And the basic concept that they had sold was saving people's lives financially. Over time, you realize that it's more about education and helping people, you know, understand more rather than saving their lives, because that's really up to them. But it caught my attention and I thought I'd try it out. And I was 19 years old at the time. And yeah, really enjoyed the things I was learning, stuff that I wanted to understand myself. So, you know, teaching other people about it seemed to make a lot of sense. So over the years, accumulated different licenses and attained my Certified Financial Planner Level 1 certificate several years back. And yeah, I really enjoy helping people get a better understanding of finances overall and move forward.
So you've been around at this for a little while. So my adjective of a seasoned financial planner was not at all out of line?
Not at all. My gray hair kind of shows that, although I started going gray fairly young. But no, that sounds right.
Okay. So I'd like to get your input on a potpourri of general financial planning issues, as I mentioned in the intro. There are practical tips that are not widely known to Canadians that people can use easily to improve their financial lot in life. So let's just dive in and discuss a few. Mm-hmm. So first, let's start with the topic of government pensions. Mm-hmm. So pensioners are often surprised by clawbacks mm-hmm. of certain pension amounts. Can you describe to us some of the common problems associated with the clawbacks? And let's see what the discussion goes to, what direction it faces here.
Absolutely. I think it's really good to know there's some basic things that just happen automatically with government pensions, which we can quickly go over. And then there's other ones that you can actually plan to get more benefit out of that a lot of people don't know or understand the planning. I've talked to a lot of accountants and lawyers and financial advisors about some specific ones around the guaranteed income supplement that they just weren't aware of, that they're not giving advice on because it's not very publicly known. But let's start with the basics. The most common pension, as far as people are aware of, is the Canada Pension Plan. And the Canada Pension Plan is a pension that's contributed to over the years as you are employed. If you're an employee, half of it is typically funded by the employer, half of it is you as the employee. And if you've done maximum pension over the years, contributions, you're typically going to be somewhere at age 65 in the about, I think it's around $1,100 or $1,200 a month. I've got it here somewhere and I'll bring it up. But it's a substantial amount. It's not usually enough to live off for one person. But if you have two people, plus some of the other supplementary government pensions, you can survive on them without a company pension. But it's sort of the basis, and it's based on your earnings and your contributions over the years. You can take it early or late and get a penalty or an extra incentive by doing that. We won't get into all those details today, but it's worth doing some of the math on, depending on your life expectancy and your other incomes, whether or not it makes sense to take that early or late. The second one is the old age security pension. That one is anyone that's lived in Canada will get that. I think there is a minimum of 10 years possibly or 5 years living in Canada. You'd have to look it up. But if you've lived in Canada for 40 years, by the time you hit 65, you'll get the maximum. And the maximum changes based on the year. And it's somewhere, I think, around 583 or thereabouts. And it goes up with inflation a bit every year. So overall, it's a decent amount that comes into, you know, between those two pensions, and especially if they have two people receiving them, it works out to a reasonable amount.
If people don't have mortgages, terms of what you had mentioned about being able to live comfortably on that CPP OAS type of income. Mm-hmm. If we have debt involved in the scenario, that's very challenging. And perhaps we can talk about that later.
Absolutely. A very good comment. The financial planning process typically includes your income sources, which is all of your pensions, income, RSPs, any type of income that's coming in. And a lot of people look at that as their determining factor of whether or not they can retire. The reality is, if you have even a small amount coming in, you can retire if you have zero expenses. The reality is, we have them. But having a mortgage or any debt going into retirement makes a massive difference on whether it's possible or not, dependent on what your income level is.
Yes. So then how does the clawback scenario affect these pensions?
So when looking at the Canada Pension Plan, it's based on your earnings and it's based on your contributions over the years. So there is no clawback on the Canada Pension Plan itself. What there is on the Old Age Security Pension Plan, which is based on your time living in Canada. I think the amount is, this year is, if you're over 75... $75,910 for 2018 individually. So if you're a couple, you could be around $152,000 before the clawback starts. But the big factor to look at is it's a 15% clawback, which is like a tax. They don't call it a tax, but reality is it's a tax of sorts. And it's for people who have high income. So fair enough, if you're of lower income, you need more funds. If you're higher income, the frustrating part about that is it kind of penalizes good savers. But the reality is it's there, so you want to be aware of it. There's some planning you can do around that. RSPs are one of the typical things that are flexible. A pension will start when you decide it to start, and it's not once it starts, it's the fixed amount. Whereas RSPs, you can choose to take them earlier or later. Most people, or a lot of people, decide to push their RSPs off until way later because they don't need the money. The problem with that is they may be pushing themselves either into a higher tax bracket later, into a place where they're going to have that extra 15% tax, which is like having a higher tax bracket, or worse yet, if they pass away and they don't have a spouse to pass their money to, the amount in your RSP is fully taxable, and if it's $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, anything over about $205,000 is taxed at 49-point-something%. So that's almost half your money going to the government instead of 30 or 20 or depending on how high your tax bracket is in your earlier years. So there is some planning you can do around draining those earlier if you're retired before 65 so that you can get your money out before the clawbacks start to kick in.
So it's interesting to think about the message of get your money contributed into your RSPs. We've heard that year after year after mm-hmm. year, but it sounds like you're saying that maybe we need to take a second look at that and really evaluate the effectiveness of putting money into our RSPs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, RSPs are a great tool. It really comes down to math. It's not everyone that benefits, and it's not all the time that it makes sense. The best case scenario is, and it doesn't even matter the tax brackets, what matters is the difference between when you're contributing and when you're taking the money out. If you're contributing, and today in a very high tax bracket of 49%, over time it's been higher than that, but in BC right now it's 49-point-something%, and you're taking the money out in retirement in a lower tax bracket, then you're actually gaining from the government. You're getting tax-free growth while it's in there, and if you put it in at 49% and get a 49% refund, take the money out and pay 20 or 30%, you're getting that difference in your pocket. That makes sense.
Yes.
The challenge with it is a lot of people, I've seen people that are in low incomes, you know, they're earning less than $38,000 or $46,000 a year, which is sort of your 20, 22, 23% tax bracket. They're contributing to RSPs now and getting that low amount of taxes back, and they'll probably be $50,000 or $60,000 a year in retirement, and that's almost a 30% tax bracket. You're actually going backwards. You're giving the government more money than you're benefiting, so you're better off using a tax-free savings account, which has no tax benefit today, same tax-sheltered growth, and no tax consequences down the road, so it won't contribute to an old-age security clawback or any other problems, and it doesn't matter if you're in a higher or lower tax bracket. So you want to really be careful when you're using the RSPs.
So we're throwing around a lot of acronyms here. So RRSP, Registered Retirement Savings Plan, TFSA,
right.
The Tax-Free Savings Plan. So I just want to make sure that our listeners understand the difference as to why the taxes are put on the RRSP withdrawals and why they're not on the TFSA. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us about those that change, that detail change, that one is taxable and one isn't taxable?
Yes, absolutely. So the RSP was started many, many years ago, and it's gone through several changes over the years. The main benefit of the RSP that people see is a tax refund when you put the money in.
And we love tax refunds. We're
absolutely
all about tax refunds.
The big factor is it's not a permanent refund. It's just a deferral until a later date in which hopefully you're in a lower tax bracket. So it's actually you get more back today percentage-wise than you pay down the road. And while the money's in there, there's no tax on the growth over the years, which if you had it in a non-registered investment, you would be paying tax as it grew or as it paid out income. So the RSP has that benefit of tax deferral over time and the tax refund when you put the money in, hopefully for when you're in retirement. Unfortunately, a lot of people pull out when they're not retired and they pay a lot of taxes. They are frustrated and say, why am I being taxed twice? You have to remind them, do you remember that refund you got way back then? It's not, you didn't pay twice, you're getting it back, but you do have to pay a tax at some point. The tax-free savings account is different. There is no tax refund when you put the money in. It's just going into a tax-sheltered account, meaning while the money is in the account, you're paying no taxes. And there are a few other tax shelters out there similar to that, but very few or none of them give you the option to also take that money out even after it's grown, completely tax-free, both your principal you put in as well as your growth, as the tax-free savings account does. So again, you're not making that tax bracket difference, but you're paying no tax on any of the growth, and it doesn't affect most income plans or disability plans. So it just works out to be a very, very beneficial type of account.
So then just for clarity then, money that goes into an RSP during my working time, technically I'm taking some of my income right now, putting it into an RRSP, getting a tax refund. So it's the idea of putting money away so that I'm going to withdraw it later. But when I withdraw it later, that is going to be categorized as income later.
That's right.
Whereas when I put money into a tax-free savings account while I'm working, it's just a savings account.
That's right.
Period. So when it comes out, when I am retired, if I'm withdrawing money from my tax-free savings, it's just cash that I have sitting in an account. It's not going to be tagged as income, and therefore the tax treatment is it's just my money. I don't have to add it onto my income tax return. I'm not paying tax. It's just my money sitting there for me to use for my expenditures.
That's right. And there's several factors to consider in that. One is the actual income tax itself. The other things to consider are when you take the money out, there are several things that are income tested. The old age security being one of them, guaranteed income supplement, which we'll talk about in a minute, is another. Pharmacare, your prescriptions, all of those things are all tied to your income. So if you have a lot of RSP income at the time when you have those expenses or things coming up that you need to consider, that's all going to count against you and hurt you. So you want to be careful that the timing of your RSP actually makes sense, and there's definitely some planning you want to do around that.